especially right now, you've got to be pretty busy.
Actually, you caught me on a good day. I'm just kind of sitting around, relaxing a little bit, waiting for a good movie to come on TV.
Okay, well, I hope we get through before your movie comes on.
Okay.
I'll ask you, I don't know, 8 or 10 questions. And if you would please just answer them as short or as long as you want to.
Okay.
And anything you don't want to answer, don't answer. Well, first, how come the Dodgers didn't win?
Well, I think we got outplayed. As simple as that. I got to just give the Braves credit. Down the stretch, when it's so important to play well, they played well. They played extremely well.
They sure did.
We didn't play too badly, but it just wasn't good enough.
I've got a 19-year-old son who's in college now. His goal is to play for the Dodgers, and he's not real pleased.
Yeah, my boy took it kind of hard, too. It's happened to the Dodgers a few times because the Dodgers get in a lot of pennant races.
That's right.
And you can't win them all.
That's right.
The trick is to get there close and to be competitive.
Maybe next year, we can hope.
Yeah.
Okay, that's neither here nor there. You signed, I've talked to, I don't know, a dozen or so bonus babies now, and I've found almost to a man the reported bonus and the actual bonus were different, and in some cases vastly different.
Yeah, that's true.
What you had a reported $25,000.
Well, mine was accurate. Mine was actually was $26,000.
Okay, well, not accurate. You're the closest one so far.
Yeah, I mean, everybody, I think in my hometown, they speculated it was more than that, but that was the amount of the bonus.
Okay. Talked with Pat Mullen a couple of years ago in an interview. Awfully nice gentleman, spoke very highly of you. He scouted you at least part of the time, he said.
That's right.
Who was the signing scout?
Well, I think maybe... Ed Catalinas and Pat Mullen got credit, and they might have mentioned Gene Desautels too, who was a Tiger scout who lived in Flint, Michigan at the time.
I think he still lives up there.
Pardon me?
I think he still lives up there.
Oh, is that right?
I also interviewed him a while back, and again, awfully nice fellow. How many teams were after you?
Well, it's hard to say because... a number of them had talked to me, but we had kind of discouraged them because I didn't think I was going to sign. I really thought I was going to go back for my senior year in college. I just didn't think I was going to be able to get a bonus contract from the Tigers. And when it happened, I just simply signed. I didn't want to go anyplace else. My family didn't want me to go anyplace else. I'd been raised in Flint. I had been a Tiger fan all my life, so had my parents. And we just didn't want to reconsider any of the offers. Once we found out the Tigers were willing to go, you know, beyond the $4,000, that put you into the category of being a bonus player, we just kind of sat down, and Mr. McHale and I threw a few figures around. It wasn't kind of piece of negotiating that would make... a text on negotiating at the Harvard Business School. I wanted to get a home for my family. I wanted to get myself through school. I wanted to get my brothers through school, and I wanted to get a car. And we had those figures up, and we came up with $26,000.
Okay, so that's basically the Tigers were the only ones in the race.
At that time, because I didn't, no one else knew that I was even thinking about signing. In fact, when I signed, I told the Tigers I would appreciate it if they would just write a brief note to all the scouting directors, because I think I talked to almost every major league club in baseball at some time, and I knew a lot of scouts might get in trouble if I signed because... you know, if their parent organization would say, well, how come you weren't in on this, and how come you didn't know that Steve Bohr was going to sign? And I didn't want to get those scouts in trouble. I'd been scouted enough to know that those scouts are supposed to keep track of boys and get a handle on whether they're thinking about signing, and if they are, how much would it take to sign them. But this thing with the Tigers happened so quickly, And all they had been talking about for a long time had been a minor league contract, that when they finally said they'd be willing to pay a bonus, like I said, in a few minutes, we came up with some figures and that was it. But as I said, part of the arrangement I made with them is I wanted the Tigers to notify by wire all the parent major league organizations and their scouting directors that I had signed with the Tigers, no one else was really, you know, in the hunt, and that the decision was final and I really wasn't ready to consider any of the teams.
Did they do this?
Yes, they did.
You have, don't take this wrong, I don't mean to derogatory, but you have an almost squeaky clean reputation. This is, a lot of the fellows I've talked to, I would have been very surprised if they had said something like this, but knowing your reputation, I'm not surprised at all that you would say something like that, require something like that.
It was something that I had to do because I knew, as I said, that I could possibly get some people in trouble because I signed with the Tigers and signed so quickly. But there weren't any repercussions, or none that I heard of. But I don't think any scouts got in trouble because of that.
That's good. Life's too short for that sort of thing anyhow.
Yeah.
So you gave up your last year of college eligibility.
Yeah, but the only way my parents would sign the contract, I was only 20 at the time, and I needed their signature, is I promised them that when I made the big leagues, I would go back and get my last year of college. My father only had a sixth grade education. My mother only had an eighth grade education. I was the oldest. I'd already got 3 years in, and it was their dream to put all their kids through college. So I promised them that when I made the major leagues, I'd go back to school, and that's indeed what I did.
Good. What's your degree in?
English.
Did you ever, was it for teaching?
No, I was, I felt I was going to play in the big leagues for 20 years, make the Hall of Fame, become independently wealthy when I finished my career, and it didn't matter that I would major in something as impractical as English literature. It didn't quite work out that way, but I'm not sorry. I really enjoyed my last year of college, and I was in liberal arts school my sophomore year. I started out in pharmacy a year, then liberal arts, then I switched to business school. My father kind of panicked because he didn't see how I could get a degree that would have any practical value if I was a liberal arts major. Then the last year, when I paid my own freight through school, I went back and met with my counselor, decided that my favorite subjects in school had been literature courses, so I went back and became an English major that last year, and I'm not sorry at all about it.
Good. I started out as an English major and switched, but it's a lot of good stuff. Just figuring out what to do with it when you get through is a challenge. Whose roster spot did you take? Do you know?
Olson. I'm going to say Carl Olson.
Carl Olson.
White, right.
He was I didn't know you ever played for Detroit.
I'm pretty sure it was Olson. I felt badly, but because here I was activated on about June 15th to 57, and he had to get sent to the minors. It seems to me his name was Olson. I have to go back and look at the records.
Okay, I'm trying to look.
He was a part-time player, extra outfielder.
Carl Olson, by golly, he sure was with the Tigers. He played 8 games with them in 1957. I always remembered him as with the Red Sox,
yeah,
and then I remember with the Senators.
Yeah, that's the guy.
Okay. He never quite made it, but this is usually the type of player who did go when the bonus babies came.
Yeah, that's right.
What kind of reception did you get from your teammates? I've gotten really tremendously different answers on this.
I tell you, they were great to me. Although they had a tradition of bonus players.
Yes, very much so.
Like Harvey Keene, Al Kaline. You know, they turned out pretty well.
Yeah.
And I got a very nice reception. I remember that I joined the Tigers, and I was wearing all this Ivy League stuff. Remember the trials, update myself a little bit, but in 57, they used to, college guys used to have the pants with the little belt back.
Yeah, I'm not that much younger than you. I wore those things.
And a lot of tweed.
Yeah.
And I got on that bus and made that first charter air flight with the Tigers, and Ray Boone saw all this stuff. He says, hey, Bush, he said, we're going to have to get you some clothes when we get to New York. And the first trip took us to New York. And if I remember right, Eisenberg and Eisenberg was a men's clothing store in New York where all the big league players got their clothes. They got a pretty good rate on suits and sport coats and slacks. And Ray Boone went with me and kind of showed me around. And I bought a new outfit over there in the pants with the little belts in back and the tweed jackets and that got put in the back of the car.
You mentioned Ray Boone. When I was a boy, he was my favorite player. Every day in the paper, I'd check to see what he did. I'd write it down and compare it with the Sunday paper to see if they were right, not me, because I knew I was right.
Well, he's a great clutch hitter and a great guy.
I've heard that from a lot of people. I've heard he's just a fine man. From what you say, then, that he was helpful. The other players, did they try to help you?
Yeah, they did, really. They're very cooperative. I remember Renier Botoya was on the club. He was an ex-bonus player. He was very nice to me.
I just spoke with him last week.
Bertoia.
Yeah, I just spoke with him last week, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Nice fellow.
Yeah, and then George Thomas joined as a bonus player about a month after I signed. So both of us were on the club.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the Tigers really were free-spinning. They got good bonus players, and much better results.
I just ran into Jim Brady. His boy pitches in our organization, left-handed pitcher in Vero. And Jim is now the president of Jacksonville University.
Yeah, I spoke with him last month.
Yeah, and Jim Small.
And he's the one who suggested that I do this book.
Yeah, you mentioned that in your letter.
Yeah.
So, you know, there were a lot of us, and we knew each other, Bob Miller.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us knew each other, and bonus players just well received in the Tiger organization. I had no problems whatsoever. I remember Dave Philly used to growl at me every once in a while, but that might have to do with the fact that the first time I took infield in Tiger Stadium in college, after you took the throw from the catcher at second base when you're middle infield, you threw it to the first baseman. Well, in pro ball, you throw it to third baseman.
Mm-hmm.
I threw the ball to first base. Dave Philly wasn't looking. I hit him right in the middle of forehead.
Oh, boy.
He healed right over backwards. But actually, after that, he was pretty nice to me. He too, but he was kind of a gruff guy who didn't, you know, he didn't like young ball players who made careless mistakes and didn't know how to play the game and weren't veterans. But even he did it in a good-natured way. My reception there was very favorable. I was very comfortable with those guys. I never felt like I was out of place and that they made me feel like I wasn't a part of the team.
Well, what about your manager, Jack Todd?
He saw me in a tryout camp 3 years before, and I was a high school senior, and he suggested I go to college. He said, you're not ready to go play pro ball. He said, you go to college, and at the time I was thinking about going to Michigan, and put on some weight and hit the books, and then, you know, maybe you'll be ready for pro ball. Well, 3 years later, the Tigers gave me a bonus contract, and it was so unusual because the fellow who ran the tryout camp for the Tigers 3 years earlier was Jack Ty, and now he was the big league manager.
That is about a one-in-a-million shot, I would think.
Yeah.
And you had no problems with him as your manager?
No, he knew me, and I really liked Jack Ty. I remember that the second day I was with him, I made my major league debut. I pinch hit against Tom Sturtevant and fouled off a fastball and a curve and a slide, and I felt pretty comfortable. I was ready to break in my first time with a hit. Then he threw me a knuckleball. If you remember, Sturtevant threw a knuckleball. And that thing danced back and forth three or four times. I barely followed it out. And I remember getting out of the box and saying something to myself. I said, what in the world are you doing here? You know, like, I really got myself. And then I popped up the next pitch. Then I think we got beat three in a row in New York. We went to Baltimore, lost another game. The club had been struggling. And I remember walking out of the hotel after the Friday night game we lost in Baltimore, and Jack Ty was walking in, and he says, hey, kid, he says, you think you can hit big league pitching? And I said something like that, yep. He said, what kind of answer is that? I said, yes, sir. And I thought, you know, he might put me in the lineup tomorrow night. And as it turned out, he did. I started, and fortunately, the first time up, I singled off Billy O'Dell, we ended up losing in about 12 or 13 innings. We won that ball game. Al Kaline singled at about the 12th inning and won the ball game for us. We won 2-1. Played a few more games in Baltimore and a couple in Washington, and then they found out pretty much I had trouble with changeups and slow curveballs. And when the word got out on that, then Jack took me out of lineup, and then basically I just had spot duty the rest of the way.
Well, you, that's a question down that brought it to mind, but I'll get to it in a minute. Some of the fellows have said that the coaching that they received was not what they needed. The feeling was that if somebody made it to the majors, he was really not needing coaching any longer. Was this the case with you?
I think the feeling was that, you know, you were supposedly a pretty good player and they didn't want to mess you up.
Uh-huh.
They felt like a lot of coaching might mess you up. I know that Tommy Henrich was a coach of the Tigers. He gave me some tips. Billy Hitchcock worked with me a little bit. But it wasn't, you didn't get coaching, especially on hitting, to the extent that you do nowadays. The feeling pretty much was, hey, this guy was supposed to be able to do something. Leave him alone and let him see how he does, rather than confuse him or change him and then perhaps follow him up.
Uh-huh. Okay. So it wasn't a conscious act of not coaching you, rather it was the feeling that you would earn your spot there.
More or less that, you know, the scouts saw something in this guy. He must, you know, they gave him this money. He's been in college. Just let him play. I mean, he must be able to do something right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about, you were 20 years old and had been in college, as you say. You were a couple years older than a whole lot of the boys. I remember Jim Small said that he was living at home and had to be in by 9 o'clock and in bed by 9:30, and then he signed, and all of a sudden he was in New York City, and people were putting their hands out for a tip, and he didn't know what to do. A very difficult adjustment. You were a couple years older. Did you find the difficulty there?
No, not really. I mean, you know, there is a protocol that you follow in the big leagues as far as tipping people, dressing, how you behave, and you got to know your place in that clubhouse and on the bench and on the team in general. But I didn't have any problem with that. Like I said, I felt very comfortable, and I felt very comfortable right from the word go. That is something I've been shooting for ever since I was a young kid who could dream about being a ball player. And as I said, the players made me feel comfortable, and I felt pretty much at ease. I really did. I wish I'd have hit a little better, not only then but later on. But I really didn't have a problem with that.
Okay, good. Before the 58 season, the bonus rule was rescinded, and so instead of being required to carry you for the full 2 years, you were able to be sent out, and you certainly seemed to make the most of this when they did send you down.
Yeah, I wanted to play. You know, I felt like I could play in the big leagues right away. Al Kaline had done that. Harvey Keene had done it. I had just hit 400 in the Big Ten, and I thought I could play right away. And I found out soon that I couldn't, that I needed some experience. I had to go learn some things. And as a matter of fact, at the last week of the season in Detroit, John McHale called George Thomas and I into his office and said that if we wanted to, Willis Hudlin was going to manage the team in the Winter League in Mexico, in Mexico City, and that George and I could go down there and play if we wished. And we both jumped at the opportunity to go down to Mexico and play winter ball.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I found out that the bonus rule had been changed over the winter and that they made it apply to bonus players signed the previous year and that we could go to the minors, I was really very pleased about it. You know, I got a taste of the big leagues, and I like being in the big leagues, but I found out very soon that I needed to go to the minor leagues and learn my trade.
Mm-hmm. Well, you did a good job of learning it. I guess what, most valuable player in Denver?
Yeah, I struggled my first year. I hit about 260 in A-ball. I started in double A, and I was over my head there, especially defensively. And then I went to AAA just for 8 days to help them out. They were shorthanded, and then I ended up in A ball. And I hit 260 there and hit 14, 15, 16 home runs, something like that. But really had terrible time with the slider and had a tough time with my defense. The next year at Birmingham, I hit 305, I think.
Yeah,
basically, what I did that summer is I learned to hit the slider, and I had to because I would have never survived if I hadn't. And then once I learned how to deal with the breaking ball, the slider in particular, then the next year at Denver in that ballpark that was really suited for hitting, I really put together a good year.
Oh, really a great year. You came back, you were there to stay pretty much at that point. You came back to Detroit and... Well, took over third base.
Yeah, I had a tough spring. I didn't hit well in the spring, and I decided that I'd hit, 30 home runs at Denver the year before, but of course that park is suited for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided, I had to survive, so I kind of changed my batting philosophy towards the end of spring training and started hitting the ball up the middle and thinking about hitting strikes and staying with the pitch. And I had a good year. It's a shame I got beaned and then I broke my collarbone, or I might have had a real shot at being Rookie of the Year that year. But at the end of the year, even though I'd hit 270, hit five home runs, driven in 62 runs, and I missed something like 7 weeks of the season with the broken collarbone and the beaning, I felt disappointed that I didn't hit more home runs. And I wanted to hit more home runs. I went back to school that winter at Michigan to pick up a semester I needed, and then when I went to spring training with Detroit, I was determined to hit with more power, and I had a great spring. I hit 320. I hit four or five home runs in the spring, and I just felt that I was going to hit with power and hit home runs and pull the ball more. And then the season started, and I got off to a horrendous start. Never got squared away. Struck out too much, hit 229, and had a really bad year. And then that winter, even though I went to Japan with the club and hit 300 on the trip, trying to get back to my old style of hitting the ball at the middle, they decided they wanted to make a trade, and the trade was made, and I went to the Cubs.
You didn't ever establish yourself with the Cubs, but the next year with the Reds, you were essentially the everyday third baseman with them.
Yeah, Chico Ruiz struggled at the plate early, and I got sent out opening day. It was between me and Ed Dixon, the pitcher, and they sent me out. I went to AAA, hit 300, and Chico Ruiz had a terrible time, so they brought me up, and I just got off to a great start. I went 50 games without an error, which set a record for Cincinnati Red third baseman. It had been held by Hall of Famer Heinie Groh. That was really, that might have been my biggest thrill in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And I hit pretty well. I tailed off a little bit towards the end. And then at the end, when we made a run at the Phillies and the Cardinals, Chico Ruiz got hot. In fact, he stole home against the Phillies. In fact, that's a play that the Philly fans haven't forgotten yet, how Chico Ruiz stole home to beat them 1-0 in a ball game. He either started them on their losing streak or really kept them going. And Chico had been playing well and doing well, so he basically finished out the season at third base because we'd been on a losing streak and he had been a part of that. But until that last 10 days of the season, basically I'd been the starting third baseman at Cincinnati, but only hit two home runs.
Yeah.
I used playoff money and some money I'd saved, and I went to Europe because I'd got my degree the following December or the previous December. So, and I'd always wanted to go to Europe, and I had to choose between going to Europe or going to the University of Chicago graduate school. I'd been accepted there in the English master's program, and decided to go to Europe instead. And while I was in Europe, I read the Sporting News where Dick Sisser, who took over for Freddie Hutchinson, was disappointed that they didn't have more power production at third base, and they were going to try Darren Johnson at third base, and let Gordy Coleman play first, and that basically pushed me into the utility man role, which was the role that I served in for the first month of the season, 65, and then I got sent to AAA, and I never did get back to the big leagues after that.
How long did you play after that?
I played through the 69 season, and then started managing the minors for the Royals in 1970.
What have you done in baseball? I know what you're doing now, and then you managed in the majors a couple of years. What else were you doing in the last 25 years, I guess?
Well, after I quit as a player in 69, I managed in the Royals farm system in A-ball for 5 years at San Jose and Waterloo. Then I got brought to the big leagues as coach for the Royals by Jack McKeon, and when he got fired, Whitey Herzog kept me on. So I coached for the Royals for 5 years. Then Whitey and the coaches all got fired, and I went to the Expo organization. I managed in their minor league system for 1 year, and then got put on their big league coaching staff in 81 and 82. In 83, I was appointed the manager at the A's, and it was there in 83, part of 84, and I got fired there. And then in 85, I became the field coordinator for the minor leagues system of the Padres, and did that for 1 year. And then when Dick Williams resigned one day into spring training in 86, they didn't have anybody available to grab that job, and I had big league experience, knew the Padre players, so they appointed me the manager for 1 year. And after 1 year, I went back to being the field coordinator. That had been 87. Then I got fired by Chuck Feeney, who had come over as the president of the Padres. And that's when I joined the Dodgers. And for 3 years, I scouted the American League for Fred Clare. And then now for the last year and a half, I've been the minor league field coordinator for the Dodgers. And hopefully that's the way I'm going to finish up my career.
Dodgers had a tremendous minor league system forever, it seemed like, and it fell on hard times, but it certainly seems to be coming back around right now.
Yeah, it is. We're really pleased. I think finally on the right track as far as signing players and developing them, and it has been a while. We went through a drought there 5 or 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
But the last 2 or 3 years now, we've come up some pretty good players. They're starting to come out of the major league scene. And the interesting thing about the Dodge organization this winter will be how many of those young players will now be incorporated into the major league club.
You got a boy caught at Bakersfield. I have a short radio program I do Saturday mornings here in Lexington. And each year I take two minor leaguers and, carry their careers, their seasons through the season, telling the people. But Mike Piazza was one of them this year. Why is he not in the instructional league?
He's going to Mexicali and coaching the Mexican League.
Is he a real prospect?
Yeah, he's a prospect. How good a prospect depends on how much further his catching ability comes along.
No shot of him moving to first base or something like that?
Well, that's a possibility. That's a possibility. But if he can catch, he's really valuable.
Yes, I would think.
If he keeps hitting 27, 28 home runs a year, he'll be able to play first base.
Sure.
You don't have to worry about him catching.
Yeah.
But we've got some outstanding first base prospects, too.
Yes, you do.
We need some help in the catching area, so we're hoping that he can be a catcher. If he doesn't catch and he keeps hitting home runs at the rate he's been hitting them, he's got a chance to be the big league first baseman.
Yeah, he never seen him play, but follow the records, and from what I can tell, not seeing him make a big difference, but he sure does seem like he's got the bat for it.
Yeah, he's got some power. He can hit the ball out of any part of the ballpark, and for a kid from A-ball to go to the Mexican League, the Winter League, is really quite a step up.
It sure is.
He can handle it. And the catcher down there is a fellow who's an ex-minor league catcher. We think he can help him with his catching. And if he makes some progress with the defensive part of the game, I think he's got a real chance to play for the Dodgers one day.
Good. That was a little aside. I didn't mean to get off. This, excuse me, I'm sorry. This next question is going to be, it's difficult to answer, but I ask it anyhow. By 1957, you had seen, you mentioned Keenan Kalin, sure, and there's Killebrew, and guys that had made it, but there were an awful lot of guys like Jim Brady, and Tommy Quelters, and Jerry Shoemaker, boys that came and went and never were heard from again. Did this give you any reservations about accepting a bonus contract?
No, I just felt certain I was going to make it and make it big time. You know, like I said, I thought I was going to play for 20 years and be an all-star player, maybe even get into the Hall of Fame. But you feel that way, you know, when you're 19, 20 years old and you're hitting 400 in the Big Ten and doing pretty much what you want on a ball field. And then you get into a league where, you know, everyone around you did that. And then you start to realize that there's special gifts, special skills that go with being an all-star caliber major league player. But I thought I was going to do it. I really did. And I'm sure all those young players felt the same way. And now as a minor league field coordinator responsible for the instruction of 200 players, they all feel like they can do it too. And you realize that only about 5% of the kids who sign make the major league. You start to realize what a rare combination of talent, luck, perseverance, mental discipline, all of it, you know, the whole package, how rare it is to find it in one player.
And every one of these kids was a star on his team from wherever he came.
That's right. And you've got to stay healthy.